Hey, Bonk.
What's up?
Not much. You want to do a podcast?
Kind of? I do. I really want it.
You went from kind of to I do. I really want to.
I was trying to suppress my desire for the podcast.
Okay.
I can't any longer.
Well, right. You've been chomping at the bit to talk about the movie.
I'm foaming at the mouth.
Foaming at the bit, champing at the bit. Is it champing or chomping? I think champing is actually a thing. I think champing at the bit is a thing that happens.
All right.
Hey, we're not alone here. Bonk.
No,
there's a, well, on top of the dog we've got here, and another dog we've got now.
We got a third dog.
Oh, this dirty dog over here that we're looking at.
And I'm foaming like a champ over here.
There he's got it. That's Ben Hansen of the MinMax.com.
Thank you. We prefer to say patreon.com/MinMax2Wins. It's a network about games, friends, and getting better here, Dan.
Man, you're learning quick. You're the Patreon, the salesmanship. You picked up on that quickly.
Oh my gosh, it has been probably the toughest learning curve. Is just, you know what? Just got to reslate. Just say the basics over and over again. Because yeah, I left Game Informer in October of last year, and so maybe I've just watched too much Greg Miller. But it's like I just need to focus. I need to study on how to do this. How to get this pitch down over and over and over again.
Well, if there's any MinMax fans listening to this, you'd be happy to know that Ben is on brand drinking bubbly right now.
That is true. Bianca, thank you for being on the MinTrax podcast.
It was a pleasure. It was so much fun. It turns out it's really easy to talk about things that you're really passionate about.
That's the secret sauce. Yeah, so on that music podcast, everybody pitches a different album that they're really passionate about. Not necessarily the favorite, but up there, and then share it with somebody else. And it's about expanding your musical horizons. And Matt Helgeson hosts it, Dan Riker.
Yes, I listened to it.
What's the name of the podcast?
It's MinTrax.
MinTrax, of course.
Yes, he's got the Min Snacks. He's got the Min Max. He's got the branding stuff figured out. He's got the salesmanship going on. This is all very surprising, Ben Hansen. For those of us who don't know your history with us, I worked with Ben Hansen for years at GameInformer.com, run by the lovely GameStop Corporation. Ben is giving a wild thumbs up right now. But yeah, we became good friends there and have definitely kept in touch beyond that. And so now he's running MinMax. And Ben, the thing that surprises me a lot about what you have to do now as the face and founder and all of that of MinMax is you used to give me shit for being like aggressively self-promotional back in the day.
Correct.
And you were the complete opposite of it back then. You didn't want to be on stuff. You preferred to be the guy that just does a weird like, ha! Laugh in the background of videos.
I faked every one of those too. Yeah.
Oh, they were fake.
Oh yeah.
Oh my god.
Big time.
Oh, don't tell Tim. So you never wanted to be on stuff, and I always thought you were hilarious and fascinating, and so I wanted to bring you on to replay videos and stuff like that, and you never wanted to. And lo and behold, here you are. You know, doing a song and dance for the cash of the listening audience.
I'll do what you want, anything you want. Yeah, it is a weird evolution. Like it's weird how that shifts. I think about it a lot. I think about like between Tim and you and I, it's like, wait, I'm the one that ended up leaning on my personality on Mike. Like this doesn't make any sense at all. The world's upside down.
You are the most prominent public facing figure of the three of us right now.
Yeah, it's terrifying. Yeah, so it's always like it came from like. I don't know. Maybe I am definitely a control freak. And so even though I was like recording and setting up the tech for all those old replays and stuff like that, all those old videos at Game Informer, I was always in the back of my mind being like, oh, I wonder, maybe we should do it this way. Maybe it'd be better. And then eventually got to the point of like, okay, maybe if I hosted one, I could kind of steer it a little bit better. And then I think like the first thing I hosted was like the Yoshi's Island Super Replay. And I was so nervous. I remember just being terrified about like, I have to talk to Brian for an hour on mic. Like, and it's not Brian's. Like, I like Brian. You know, it was just this feeling of just like, I haven't talked to him for an hour, period. I can't do this on mic.
But you are a man who's like done nothing but listen to long form interviews and podcasts. Before podcasts, you've listened to how many thousands of hours of Loveline and like, this has been your thing forever.
Yeah, definitely. So it's a lot going back to that. But, yeah, it works out okay. I think I got a little more comfortable being on mic, but it's still, I think it's also healthy that I didn't want to step into like the hosting role necessarily. So hopefully there's still some of that like lack of an ego here. Because like the beauty of MinMax overall, it's like, oh, it's a network and stuff like MinTrax where Matt Helgeson's hosting it now. Like I hope we move more in that direction where it's like contracting out with different folks just to have more variety of voices. So it's not just the Ben Hansen show, because I can't imagine anything more terrifying than I'm going to launch a Patreon. It's patreon.com/Ben Hansen. Check it out. It's like, oh, how gross would that be?
I don't know anyone who's straight up done their name. You had Drew Scanlon do the cloth map. You had Greg Miller do the kind of funny. You had Danny O'Dwyer do the no clip. Not a whole lot, just straight up being like, hey, I'm Patreon Danny O'Dwyer.
Well, I think you honestly are the closest to that, because when you talk about being self-promotional, I mean, in the early days of GI, you said getting your, you know, Twitter followers was like a big priority for you.
It was.
So I don't think there's a direct analog between that and what Hansen's doing now. I mean, promoting his project is very different than promoting himself.
Right, right. But he's not out there putting his name front and center on the old Patreon.
That's my
name.
Point. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. He's a
it's
Minnesota.
Respectable.
It's a respectable Midwestern way about you.
That's right. Midwestern sensibility. That's why it's called MinMax. We got the whole Minnesota connection here. But
oh, is it with two N's? Oh, it's with two N's.
It's with two N's. It's a subtle Minnesota
really good
thing.
Name.
Oh,
hey,
thanks.
Good work. Good work on getting that new logo, by the way.
New logo's great.
It's no longer an eco plate or eco friendly
like
paper plate.
A logo for a company that makes eco friendly paper plates. And now it looks like a nice logo for a nice video game outlet.
Yeah, you're like, no one's perfect. I was into that green for a while because you have to choose something. It's just like, oh crap, we got to go. What color do you like? I don't know. I like dark green shirts. That's it. We'll go for it. And then
you're
everyone...
never a graphic design guy, were you?
No, it's not great. Yeah.
Well, it's been cool seeing you do this, Ben, because I think you and I and everyone that knows us or worked at Game Informer or was connected to that place in any way, it was a very family atmosphere there that I dearly miss. And so it's so cool to have kind of that spirit and a lot of the personalities that were so great from that place without all the baggage from the corporation.
Very high-level baggage. It's not. I don't want it to be seen as anti-Andy or Ryan or anything. But yeah, just knowing that there's a corporate overlord. Yeah, and they're still going strong over there at Game Informer, you know? Like, the Game Informer show, Andy hosts it now, which is fun to listen to. It's so crazy that somebody that's been at that magazine since 1991 is hosting their podcast. It's incredible.
You were trying to get him to do that Snake Eater Super Replay for a while.
Yeah, it's just, oh man, he would have complained so much. It would have been brutal. I hope they still do it. I think that'd be fun. But yes.
To be clear, yes, Game Informer as an outlet and the people there and everything, the people there in Minnesota, great, great folks, worked really, really hard for all those years putting that magazine and website together. It's, yeah, above that gets a little hanky.
Yeah, for sure. But hey, the MinMax show is our weekly podcast. If you want to check that out, we'd appreciate it. But two things I want to note. One, yes. Bianca really made me laugh on her Mintrax episode when they're talking about what the worst case scenario is. And she said, well, we could all die, I believe. And
worst case scenario for what? Trying to remember that part.
It was towards the end. I forget what the context was, just about like the worst case scenario about listening to an album or something like that.
Oh, well, someone said something like, oh, best case scenario, something, something. I was like, worst case scenario, you die.
That's always the worst case scenario, I think.
We should mention it more, I think, that it's always an option. But I like it because it threw everybody off. Like, no one was prepared because you're such a sweet and bubbly person to just have this, even though you've talked about death metal for an F an hour, like, no one expected you to come in with this dark tone at the end. And so that's notable thing number one. Notable thing number two. Not one tweet about your Mintrax episode from Dan Reichert. Not one tweet.
Oh, I thought you retweeted it.
I thought I did too.
I don't think so.
I thought I at least did a retweet.
Well,
you can
still retweet it because it's every 2 weeks. So theoretically, we're still like right in the middle of it being released and before the new one. So it's still timely.
It's always
more valuable, a click on a website or my voice giving a full-throated recommendation for Mintrax, the episode with Bianca Reichert, Matt Helgeson, and the entire MinMax network with Ben Hansen.
This sounds pretty half-throated, Dan. I need full throat. Anyways.
That's good.
I didn't hear what you said.
It doesn't matter.
Great.
All right. Well, you want to talk about Son of the Mask?
Boy, do I.
Okay.
Wait, we should talk about how we arrived at Son of the Mask.
Yes. How did we? Oh, yeah. So we did some text back and forth here.
Right. We were trying to like brainstorm ideas for what to watch with Hansen. And he sent us this long list of movies that you wanted to watch, and there were
with two entries for Earth Girls Are Easy.
That appeared two times on the list.
Which I
even
also
though
I'd
it seems
seen.
You already watched that, yeah.
So, which we've consulted your list before, like when we've gone July 4th, we usually go to your lake house in Minnesota, and I think we watched Wild Hogs. Thanks to your list, we watched
Dumb and Dumber 2.
Oh, Dumb and Dumber 2 was definitely one of them.
Yes,
yeah, and we've all watched Old Dogs. We all know how great Old Dogs is.
It's still the worst movie I've ever seen in my life. Yeah, so I have my list separated into two big chunks. One is like good movies I've been meaning to see, and then there's a break in the note on my phone, and then it's movies I want to watch under the influence.
Yes.
Which that's where a lot of the duplicate entries are.
Because I'm usually under the influence while typing this out. Like, man, I've got to watch Earth Girls Are Easy. This is going to be great.
Earth Girls Are Easy. Double up on that one.
Yeah. So I sent you over the list and just said, please pick something from this. Because you made it very clear that under no circumstances can we watch something good like the Gary Shandling documentary on HBO.
No. I just said we typically don't do a lot of documentary stuff on here. We just watched Tiger King. The internet's abuzz about it. But documentaries and comedies, we tend to not do a ton of those. Like, we watched Monty Python and the Holy Grail last night.
Yeah.
And, you know, these are all eligible for Painting the Stream. But it's just, like, comedies, you know, we did a couple early in the show where it was just like, that joke was funny. That joke was funny. This stuff didn't work. Whereas we feel that bad movies or really good ones tend to have a little more that we can talk
and
about.
And documentaries especially, I feel like you run the risk of just kind of reiterating exactly what the documentary said.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I hear you.
Down the staircase and... Yeah,
I hear you. Just next time that we're on, can we please talk about the Gary Shandling documentary? Because it's not that funny. It's just going to be a good discussion about death and comedy for 2 hours. So
I have no connection to Gary Shandling outside of maybe seeing him on Conan once and he looked weird.
I think you're holding that on me. I think you're lying.
I know. Look, I know. I've heard Conan talk about it on his podcast. It does sound like it'd be very fast.
Yes, of course it is.
I will watch it. I promise.
Great. But who has time for that when we have Son of the Mask on demand?
We also had to turn down. You wanted to watch Sean Connery's most recent performance as we watched the trailer. And we were just like, what the fuck is this? It was like Sean Connery was on a train and he was a zookeeper or something. What was it about?
It's some... an animated movie.
Yeah.
He has an animated movie from like 2012, and I think it's Sean Connery's last performance, probably will be his last performance, and it is just the worst animation I've seen in a very long time. It looks like just some weird European budget animated film where he kind of feels like he's going for a little bit of a James Bond type thing, but you can hear him phoning it in even in the trailer. It's rough.
Literally on the phone. It's a speakerphone.
Yeah.
Yes. So was Son of the Mask on your list? Because we had talked about watching that for a while. So I think that's where we realized, like, oh, we had passed by that and like, oh, God, we should watch this sometime. And then we saw it on your list. And it's like, okay, this is probably the one.
It's a match made in heaven. I am shocked that you haven't seen this movie, Dan.
No. And I haven't seen the original Mask since probably high school, I think. And I remember being obsessed with it when it came out.
I was obsessed with it as a kid.
Oh,
yeah. God. You must have been really young, Bob.
Yeah. I watched it many times.
Yeah. So how old were you? Do you remember seeing it in the theaters?
I don't remember seeing it in the theaters, but it's, you know, I feel like when I was a kid, I would watch the same movies over and over again.
Oh, yeah. I think every kid.
Yeah. That being said, I don't remember a lot of the details of that movie. Like, I don't remember at all there being like a big Norse mythology presence in that movie at all.
I don't think there is.
Well, yeah, I looked it up and I read the plot of the first one to kind of refresh myself. And yeah, it is alluded to that it is like a Loki thing.
Oh, really?
But I don't think it goes as hard on it as Son of the Mask does, which Ben Stein is in the beginning and he's actually reprising a role from the first one. I guess he is like a therapist or something that talks to Jim Carrey's character and somehow the Loki stuff gets brought up there. But here, Loki is far more involved.
Mm. He is the second character in the film, basically. Yes. Yeah.
Before we get to all that, though, yeah, the first one. So like, Bonk, you must have been like three when it came out or something.
I think it was very young.
Yeah, I think it was like 94. Right. Because it was around the time that like Jim Carrey, and we've talked about Jim Carrey on Painting the Stream before, because we did Cable Guy, which holds up incredibly, incredibly well.
It's a really good movie.
Yeah. And I remember loving Jim Carrey on In Living Color. And so when Ace Ventura came out, I was like, oh my God, this guy's so funny. This movie looks amazing. And it was like back to back to back of Ace Ventura, The Mask, and Dumb and Dumber.
All
and
in 1994.
Three. No. Wait, were they?
All 1 year.
They were?
Yes.
Oh my God, because in my head it is just like back to back to back. And I distinctly remember after after The Mask, I was at a swimming pool in Lenexa, Kansas, and my friend was like, have you heard about what Jim Carrey's next movie is? And I was like, no, what's the next one? Because this is before the internet and trailers and all that. And we're just sitting in a pool, and he goes, it's Dumb and Dumber. And I was like, what is that? And I thought he was saying like it was a name, like his first name was Dumbin, which isn't a name. And then it was like Dumber was the last name. And I was like, oh, he plays Dumb and Dumber. And I was like, what's that about? I want to see Dumb and Dumber.
What are you That is, ironically, the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life.
I thought that was his character's name. And I was like, well, this is so mysterious. I know the name, but I don't know what it's about.
I mean, I'm confident in one thing, that his name is Dumb and Dumber.
I can say that with certainty. Me, a child in a swimming pool. Speaking of which, Bonk and I watched Dumb and Dumber not too long ago.
Yeah, it has some really funny moments. Some really, like, kind of dark moments.
Yeah. In fact, like, one of them was, like, a deleted scene. Mm. That I don't remember the specifics, but
it
I remember.
It was, like, weirdly rapey.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They were, like, in a bed or something. It was weird.
But that scene where they cry during the insurance commercial is really funny.
With the $100 bills that they're wiping on their face.
That's right. God, I got to watch that again.
Yeah, so like 1994, Jim Carrey is just on top of the world. And me as a 10-year-old, it's just like, this guy is God. Like, yeah. Everything he does is so hilarious. And like three movies in a row that just killed me. And I'm confident now that Ace Ventura, I have watched in recent years, and it's still pretty funny a lot of the time. Dumb and Dumber, we watched recently. It's still funny. I have not seen The First Mask in so long, and I'm not super confident that one will hold up.
Right.
Yeah,
I agree.
I went back and watched some clips because if there's one takeaway from watching Son of the Mask, it's, boy, you really appreciate Jim Carrey. But, like, I went back and watched some clips, and, like, the dance sequence, like the chick, chick-a-boom, chick, still very fun, at least from the short YouTube clip. So,
is it as fun as the dance sequence in this one?
I can't choose which is better.
We'll get to that.
Oh, boy, will we. Yeah, I'm curious how it holds up, because, like, it's so weird even watching those clips, because there's just moments where I'm like, oh, my God, it's so connected to being young. Because, yeah, I was 7 when that movie came out. And so that line where he, like, flies out, he's like, look, Ma, I'm roadkill. Like, not funny, really. But I remember saying that all the time as a kid. Because I'm like, oh, I think this is what a joke is. I say, look, Ma, I'm roadkill. There's no context. Even in context, it's not funny.
I think the key with him, though, especially in those days, was that he sold everything so insanely hard.
Yeah.
Like, he believed every line he was saying. Like, I feel like he could turn, like, a mediocre script into, like, just this virtuoso performance.
Like Dumb and Dumber 2.
Oh, maybe I'll take that.
But back in the day, you
1994.
Could... Yeah, but
Prime
honestly...
Carry.
The weird thing about watching, finally, Earth Girls Are Easy, and I think I had to watch it twice because I had to follow the list, but that movie sucks, but he still sells it. Like, he is still really compelling in that movie.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I've not seen that. That was pre-Ace Ventura, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's late 80s, so it's Jeff Goldblum right. And him and Damon Wayans as aliens covered in fur and Gina Davis. It's something, man.
Well, Bonk, you were with us when we watched Dumb and Dumber 2 in Minnesota. What are your memories of that?
I remember it being kind of sad.
Not the plot.
But just sad to see these guys just trying so desperately to, like, do what they did when they were in their prime.
Yeah, and guys that, like, you know, it's not like Jim Carrey and Jeff Daniels are, like, sob stories now. Like, they're still, like, Jeff Daniels is still getting tons of work. Carrey's, like, highly respected and, you know. But to see them do this was like, what? You guys are
above
this?
Yeah, they didn't have to do it.
No.
And the weird thing, too, that I wasn't expecting is I don't think I've ever seen Dumb and Dumber in HD. And so going from like a VHS copy of Dumb and Dumber to full HD close-ups of old Jim Carrey for Dumb and Dumber 2, that was something that added to the sadness, I think. It's just like, man, you can see him trying. It feels like you're watching a film at like 128 frames per second. Just like this weird, uncanny feeling of just like, it's too real. I really don't like it.
Yeah. Well, this one came out in 2005. Sans or Sans? Is it like Comic Sans or is it Sans Jim Carrey?
Sans, sure. Without, you could say.
Without Jim Carrey in it. But we do get Jamie Kennedy, which promptly after watching this, I showed Bianca the legendary Activision press conference.
I also watched that today.
The joke that always kills with gaming crowds. Man, I got a lot of virgins in here.
What? Can you imagine being so selfish and self-centered than to think that that's the good move? Like, he's trying to appeal to a crowd that's watching an Activision press conference that isn't into gaming so that he looks cool? Like,
I don't know. I don't know what the logic is. I think the most painful part of that whole thing is the faux cheesy.
Yes. Yeah, but
what year was that?
2007.
Yeah.
That was probably still a time when people thought, like, people that played video games were dorks and, you know, virgins and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, like, this joke will kill the gaming crowd.
Yeah.
It was really,
it made me uncomfortable to watch.
But the part...
And he gets so upset when someone suggests that he's not funny. Like, the game designer, I forgot his name, was funnier than him.
Yeah. My favorite thing that comics do when they're bombing is when they act like it's the audience not understanding the comedy.
Yeah.
And so, like, no one's laughing, and then he'll make a joke that's just not funny, so no one laughs, and, like, one guy will make a sound, and he'll be like, this guy gets it. This guy understands comedy.
He's an idiot. But yeah, no, that game designer part was amazing because it's some British developer sitting on the couch, and then he's like, oh, you're British, huh? Because Jamie Kennedy's just flying with his wit. He's like, hey, you're British, huh? How about we do this whole interview like I'm Ozzy Osbourne? And the developer's like, I thought you already were. And then the crowd laughed, and then he's like, oh, okay, all right. And then somebody from the crowd is like, yeah, he's funnier than you are or something. And Jamie Kennedy, like, you can tell he's actually a little bit hurt by it, but it's like, oh, good. Yeah. I guess he had it coming.
Yeah. But he is the star, so he's filling the giant cartoon shoes of Jim Carrey.
Oh my
in this.
God. He is a
I'm sorry. I was just gonna say he doesn't really kind of do the Jim Carrey thing. I feel like he doesn't. I thought it would be a movie about him in the way that the mask is about Jim Carrey's what's his name?
Stanley Ipkiss.
Stanley Ipkiss.
Yeah, yeah.
But he really is a side character to the baby, and you know he isn't the reason why all the stuff is going down the way it is.
Yeah, which ultimately, if I was in charge of making a mask sequel and I didn't have Jim Carrey, that's probably the smart play is to be like, okay, we can't have it all ride on the lead's shoulders because we don't have Jim Carrey who could do that.
Right. Yeah, and imagine like, hey, you take the box office, which I looked up. So the mask, the original, cost $23 million and ended up making $351 million. So I'm sure the producers are looking at that number and then it's like, combine that with Look Who's Talking 2.
Boom, juggernaut.
You know, unfortunately, you have Jamie Kennedy, who's a black hole of charisma at the center of this effing thing.
Yes. Which, by the way, if you want to watch this, which I think we would all recommend, it is on Amazon Prime Video. So if you'd like to watch it there, or you can spend... We
paid to rent it, yeah.
Wait, why did we pay? I wrote down that it's on Prime Video.
We paid to rent
Oh, we paid on Prime. Yeah. Oh, it wasn't the free thing. Yeah. It was the... Okay, so we paid money to watch Jamie Kennedy. Did you, Hanson?
Oh, yeah, I paid big money. I own it now.
Oh, big money. Oh, you clicked that box for the big money.
That's right.
I see. So, I'm curious, Bonk, if I were to ask you, what does the mask imbue on the wearer? If you had to explain what the powers are,
just
what's
based
checklist?
Purely on Son of the Mask?
Yeah, or I mean, I think it's got a lot of similar stuff as the first one.
Okay, you put the mask on. First of all, your face becomes green and you have a really big chin.
Yes.
You have a butt chin, even if you didn't have a butt chin before. You start to feverishly dance, and like you have, there's no filter anymore. Because you can just act on whatever desire you have because you can literally will things into existence, objects that hadn't existed before. You can manipulate people's minds so they dance synchronized with you. You can tear clothes off women and they don't mind.
They love
it. They love it. You can rob banks if you're Stanley Ipkiss.
Right. Yes.
It's madness.
Can you be harmed?
I don't think so.
I think you just... the shorthand is it turns you into a cartoon character, right?
Right, and you can just pull things out of the air and everything. It's even more powerful than, like, a Terminator thing, where it's like, oh, this Terminator can make complex flamethrowers and stuff. By the way, I was thinking about Terminator a lot during this movie, and we'll get to that.
What?
But, wait, no. It's, like, one-to-one. We'll get to it.
Hang on, all right.
The cast, we got Jamie Kennedy. He plays Tim Avery. We'll just call him Jamie Kennedy because who cares about these characters. We got Alan Cumming as Loki, the god of mischief, right?
Yeah.
So I think I like Alan Cumming, but I'm not sure why. Is it just because he kind of looks like Paul Reubens? Why do I like him?
I think he's respected, right? I think he's like a well-known...
He is. I think people said he was like the one redeeming part of this movie was his performance.
Yeah, there's nothing about what he does that particularly irked me. I thought he was having fun with the role. I mean, he looked ridiculous in this. The opening, okay, we'll go into the rest of the cast here in a second, but the opening, first of all, it's an Edge City and Fringe City. It's all these like Death Stranding sounding cities here, which I assumed the first one was just like New York or Pittsburgh or something. I didn't realize it was in this crazy comic world.
Well, it's weird too, because it's like, are they taking that from the comics? I tried reading like about the original comics a little bit, and the most confusing thing I found is that the main character in Son of the Mask is called Tim Avery, where it's like, okay, obviously they're going for like a Tex Avery from like old Looney Tunes reference there. But then there's a villain in the comic series originally for the mask that's called like Walter Avery. So it's like, well, no, I don't understand what they're going for. Are both separately going for a Tex Avery homage?
Well, there's a lot of cartoon homages in
One. Yeah.
And like obviously in the first one, but I think it goes even harder in this one because Tim Avery works at Animagic, some like animation house. He's like a wannabe animator who...
Torpedo the Turtle.
Yes, he plays a turtle. And the main dude that is like the main head honcho cartoonist is Stephen Wright, the comedian.
Yeah, that was a fun reveal. It's like, oh, okay, this movie got better, I guess.
Yeah, because like I grew up like seeing a lot of Stephen Wright stuff on you know like Premium Blend and like Comedy Central stuff, and I thought he was a very kind of like pre-Hedberg, you know, short, you know, observation. We actually watched some of his stuff after the movie, and like I've always loved his delivery.
Yeah,
which by the way, to go back to Matt Helgeson, is there kind of a Matt Helgeson thing going on with Stephen Wright?
With the hair?
No, just the way he was kind of talking.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, the joke was the Matt Hogan's in the
hair. I guess imagine like, yeah, the voice box of Stephen Wright, but then more of a roller coaster of a delivery, more emotion in the delivery, I guess. For that's okay. What Matt Hogan is.
Okay. I wasn't familiar with Stephen Wright prior to watching this movie, and I would not have known that he was a comedian or anything. He really wasn't funny at all in this movie.
No, it's like I got.
It's not his fault. He just wasn't given the opportunity.
Oh yeah, like when I saw him, I got a quick pop where it's just like, oh man, Stephen Wright, great. But then like, there's no use for him. It's just like Stephen Wright for Stephen Wright's sake.
Unlike Cal Penn, which they really got their money out of that role.
What? He's a coworker at the animation place, right?
And he just walks around wearing a mocap suit? Like, I don't know what's going on.
And he loves a girl that's at the party, and I don't think anything really comes of that.
That Does man, it? He worked in the White House, remember? Like,
such a in real life.
Yeah. Right.
Was he like an Obama aide or something?
Yeah.
That's weird. Okay. So, the museum scene at the beginning.
Yeah.
Bonk, what was your first... what was your first suspicion that something was not great about this movie?
Probably as soon as Loki like went into anger mode and his face turned green.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, also all the like crowd banter around the like museum pieces was really, really interesting.
Well, they said
That's
at some
right.
point that, yeah, oh, Loki, which I was very confused by the way. They're like, oh, you know, the god Loki, we have his mask in this museum. I'm like, you have a god's mask? But anyways, he's explaining like, oh, it lets you, he's the trickster god and he can do anything with this mask. He could even turn into a woman. And then somebody in the crowd says, turn into a woman? Man alive, lock up your sons and daughters around that twisted piece of fruitcake.
That's right.
That was, yeah.
That's
that was
the one. We actually rewound. We're like, wait, what did he say? Because yeah. He kind of like just stumbles his way through it, but yeah.
Yeah. But then, of course, the movie's one step ahead of you. And of course, the God's Mask isn't in the museum. It's a fake. It was made in Taiwan.
It was. There's several, what do you call it, switcheroos there where it's not the real thing. But wait, why does he turn into, why does he have the ability to turn into crazy green face?
This is what
I think he needs a mask to do it, right?
I'm so confused about it. He's desperate to get this mask back so he can have his power. Meanwhile, he's doing things that are far more impressive than anybody with the mask is doing.
He rips off Ben Stein's face in the first 5 minutes of the movie. Not even rips it off. Takes it off so there's skin underneath.
Yeah.
And makes it float around and wrap around like a mannequin head.
It is unnerving. But like the scene where then the guards run in and then he's got like the big cartoon guns and he's like shooting holes mm-hmm. in the floor and stuff. This is like the glimmer of hope that this movie has running through it is like I love cartoons and I'm a sucker for at least movies going for like live action cartoons. It mm-hmm. almost never works, but like it's fun to see directors try it, you know? So I was like, okay, at least it'll be something visually to look at. And they really leaned into that later to the point then eventually where it's like, they should have just made a cartoon just because this is absurd.
Well, yeah, they made their own cartoons within it from time to time.
Right.
They do one of my favorite bits from old Looney Tunes, which is where all of a sudden a scene's happening and then a giant pencil goes into frame and you can see like the animator's hand and it kind of breaks the fourth wall. Like I've always loved that where it's like, oh, we're just going to erase Elmer Fudd from this scene and then, you know, Bugs Bunny's going to make a quip.
Yeah,
like, I always loved that fourth wall stuff.
It's Duck Amuck, yeah, that old Looney Tunes short, which they made the DS game off of, which last time you were in Minneapolis, I made you play that cool DS game where it's like all you're interacting with is Daffy Duck. It's sweet.
Right. Which we actually saw some of that in Monty Python last night in Holy Grail when they have like the writer, like it cuts to the writer and he dies or something. I can't remember what that bit was. But yeah, it's the same thing. I've always loved that fourth wall stuff.
Yeah.
And so there were many times during this movie I was thinking like, is this movie all right? Because it seems to have like a...
At least in the beginning, I felt like, okay, they're trying to capture the spirit of the first movie, which was like extremely cartoonish and wild, like how Ben describes it. But I don't remember it being like that insane, like especially from the jump, but just in general. Like I don't remember the masked powers like permeating people like that surrounded the mask in the way that it does here.
Right, because there's big song and dance productions and stuff in the first one, but... Ben, were you watching clips of the first one?
Yeah.
Is that
so,
what
I mean,
you said, or you just read?
No,
just
read. He can make them dance, but I don't remember how much brainwashing is going on. But is there that much in this movie? I mean, it's confusing because, like, the wife, the sexuality of the mask is something I really want to dive into here because it is weird in both movies, but in this one in particular, it really feels like he puts that mask on and it's like, it's so weird if you trace the history of it, because it's like him basically going back to 1940s Bugs Bunny, which is like smooching everybody and just like being really forceful with your sexuality. And because they're like pulling from that reference and putting it in live action, it just feels so bizarre when it's like, hey, wife, let me bang the bejesus out of you because I'm wearing the mask. And even like when he's wearing the mask then, she's like, ooh, you look so hot. It's like, what is going on?
Well, here's the thing, is like, before he left for that Halloween party, at least the wife had to stay home with the kids. Which
the wife, her sole characteristic is that she desperately wants a child.
Yes, wants children, and also wants to fuck the mask.
Yeah, I guess so.
To sit on the mask.
She is, by the way, the girlfriend from Dirty Work, because I knew, I was like, I've definitely seen her somewhere.
Her name
I looked
is Trailer Howard.
Yes, Trailer is her name.
Wow.
Yes.
She does a good job in the movie, honestly. Below, like, yeah. Alan Cummings, I'm like, she's probably my second favorite actor in here. And the baby, so, of course, but we'll get to that.
So the sex stuff. So she says before he goes to the party, she's like, hey, I hope the party goes well. And when you get home later, maybe we'll talk about it. And like, that's her like, hey, we're going to screw later thing. So she's already in bed asleep, assuming like, hey, I promise I'd fuck him when he comes home. So I got to do that. And my assumption was it was dark. And so she just woke up. She's groggy. It's dark. And doesn't know he's a weird green man on top of her doing fucking crazy Tasmania spins or whatever the hell they're doing in bed. I assume that's a deleted scene.
Uh-huh.
But so they conceive a baby during this.
Yes.
Which I assumed the baby would be like perma-masked, since like I thought he would have like masked blood within him because
well,
like
he does.
That was part of.
He
does.
Have blood, but he doesn't look like he's wearing the mask. He
exactly.
Doesn't have a green face.
Yeah, on sight, it's like, that's a human baby. But then when he starts doing Michigan J. Frog routines, you're like, something's up here.
Did he do the Michigan J. Frog routine in the film?
Yeah.
You forgot?
I'm just joking. It was like, I took notes and I'm like, is this just going to be a Michigan J. Frog thing? And
that's
then a scene
exactly
later,
I
feel like
we thought that was all he was going to do through the whole movie.
It is absurd. How they show him watching the Michigan J. Frog classic bit. And they show like five times as much of it as they should and then carry it so long. It's like an homage isn't enough. They just need to beat you over the head with a mallet being like, it's like the Michigan J. Frog thing.
Yes. Which I love because at the beginning of the actual Michigan J. Frog cartoon, it's just like a normal frog just making a sound or whatever. And Bonk said to me like, man, did old cartoons just used to be shitty?
Oh, wow.
And then by the end of it, she was like, I love Michigan J. Frog.
WWWWB.
Michigan J. Frog is a good character.
Oh, he's number one fictional character in my mind.
Beyond Aggro the Horse and Shadow the Colossus.
Oh, man, you put those two together. Look out!
For those not familiar with that, Ben Hansen has genuinely argued with me that Aggro the Horse that doesn't do anything in the game is the greatest video
Both
game character
are
of all time.
I said it's the character that I care the most about, and I stand by it.
Okay. So, can we talk about, speaking of video games, can we talk about how he played that fucking Game Boy Advance SP?
What was that? He's holding it like a claw. I was trying to think, like, well, maybe it's because, like, they wanted to make sure that his hands weren't in the way of the frame for seeing the game that they probably were paid for. But then it's like, well, wait,
Mario Kart Super Circuit.
Yeah. But then, like, you could still see the game fine if he was holding it like a normal human being.
Just shoot over his shoulder pointing down. It doesn't have to be at eye level.
Maybe he's so mad.
With the screen tilted up. I hated that. The Game Boy, the SP deserves better.
Yes, absolutely. And his wife was just nagging him, but we gotta have a baby. And I think everybody's on his side. Like, we want him to play that cool game. So dumb.
It's the worst Mario Kart, but it's still a good game.
Yeah, absolutely. So, what did you think about the scene before that where they're visiting friends and the kids are all little hellions? Because it's weird, because I don't know if they're intentionally going for a Raising Arizona reference with that, because it feels so much like Raising Arizona. It's like the kids are writing fart on the wall and all that stuff.
That didn't cross my mind. And like, Bonk, I know you and I watched Raising Arizona within the last year. Did not, that didn't come to mind for me, I don't think.
When I think about,
go ahead.
Oh, no, yeah, when I think about like live action cartoons, it's like Raising Arizona is always like, I think that's that right threshold where it's like it's cartoony but not literally trying to be a cartoon. It's just got like this slight slapstick energy, and I feel like that movie's like that right balance.
Yeah Bonk, that's one of the like early Coen brothers movies we watched. You enjoyed that overall?
Oh yeah,
right?
Yeah, it was great.
Anytime Nicolas Cage gets to do like well-written comedy, like we talk about Jim Carrey selling it, like Cage sells the shit out of everything he ever does.
Yeah, I guess so.
How is it that we've done like 110 episodes of this podcast and we've done like a billion John Travolta movies and have we done Nicolas Cage?
I don't think so.
I don't think we've done a Nicolas Cage movie and we've done like five John Travolta movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ben, have you heard of The Fanatic?
The Fanatic? No.
It's starring John Travolta. It's directed by Fred Durst from Limp Bizkit.
Oh, no.
And can you, are you at a computer?
Yes.
Do me a favor, Google John Travolta, The Fanatic, and just see what he looks like in this movie. And we did a whole episode about this, but I have to bring up that at one point, a dad is in a car with a kid and says, "Hey, do you want to hear some Limp Bizkit?" And the kid goes, "Yeah." And then they just play a Limp Bizkit song in the movie directed by Fred Durst.
Oh, my God. Yeah, there's a screenshot of him choking the life out of a man.
That's the movie. It made $3,000 at the box office.
Wow. I've never heard of it.
There's a reason why it came out this year.
Wow. All
it
right.
It came out last year.
Oh, last year. Last year, yeah. It's we watch a lot of good stuff on this podcast.
Seems that way.
Okay, so the party scene. We've alluded to it. Bonk, you're right. Like, it seems like he does have the ability to make everyone go into fits of dancing.
Right.
And it's not even like, I don't remember how they did it in the first one, if it's like a involuntary thing.
Yeah.
It's like sometimes they'll do a thing where somebody's under the spell and they're like, whoa, my body's moving.
It's exactly that. Yep.
That's not what's happening here. Everyone has the routine down.
Yeah. And so Stephen Wright is like disappointed, I guess, that the party isn't really like happening. But there aren't a lot of people there. Like, it seems like there's just a handful of people from the office. And then Jamie Kennedy comes in with the mask on and suddenly it's teeming with people and they're all dancing and he tears the clothes off of the band that's performing and reveals sexy lingerie and they're all really into it. And then he goes into this like weird like amalgam of different genres of music covering that song
Too Good to Be True.
Yeah.
You're just too good to be true.
Yeah. And it goes from like country to like hip hop.
Neil Diamond.
Yeah, what was your favorite part of that?
Him rapping. Actually, my favorite part of the whole thing is after there's one line and then you just hear a voice go, yeah, yeah, during the rap part.
His tone.
There's the part where it's, this is the part where you boogie. This is the part where you dance. Yeah, yeah. That's my favorite part.
That sucked so hard.
You know what? Why it really bothered me? It seemed like they weren't trying to be funny. Like they were trying to like, you a really good cover of this, like a fun rap cover
of
the song.
This guy's a wacky cool guy, like he's just a living cartoon, he's having a good time.
What does Loki know about rapping? That doesn't really work with the mythology.
Is that the spirit of Loki inhabiting him?
Yes.
Oh,
I thought it was just I think it just brings out, like you said, like all inhibitions are down or whatever. So I think the rap and the remix of music is coming from Jamie Kennedy's soul,
I see.
And it's through the power of Loki that he can make it look so unbelievable, which is the confusing part to me, is like no one at that party was like, sweet Jesus Christ, there's some supernatural stuff going on. Everyone just leaves the party and then the conclusion is just, what a cool dude. It's like,
no, the conclusion is he goes home and gets laid and conceives a child. That's the conclusion of that scene.
And he gets a promotion.
Yeah, his boss is like,
great.
His boss is like, that character, that's the future of animation, is that time you wrapped at a party? Like, I don't understand these conclusions.
Which also, did the mask in the first one, I don't remember looking that plasticky.
It
like,
sucks.
The hair is full on like Lego plastic. And in the first one, I just remember Jim Carrey looking like he had a bald cap and a bunch of green face paint
on. He had the chin.
Yeah.
But that was it.
Yeah, it wasn't like this weird action figure, a small soldier's man.
Yeah, the hair, I think, is what really ruins it. Maybe they're trying to make his mask look different, so they decided to put that gross yet Lego hair on it, but it's horrific.
Yeah, yeah.
And his tone,
great.
His tone of voice, like, is it still Jamie Kennedy? It sounds so different.
Or is it someone else singing? I don't know. Speaking of voice acting,
yeah.
Okay, there is a part after this. So we go into a bunch of like baby wackiness after this, and like a lot of like horrible baby CG of babies dancing and talking, and their heads inflating like balloons.
They really
like
loved
that.
Ally McBeal and just cranked it up a notch. Like, this should be the film.
Yes, like 8 years after that Ally McBeal thing. But there's a running thing where the baby will say mama and mommy and stuff like that, but it won't say daddy.
Yeah.
And so they're trying to, like, he says madre and stuff. And then one time they make it seem like he's going to say daddy, and then he goes mother in this really deep voice. And I joked to Bianca, I was like, oh, it sounds like the Halo announcer. It's just like, oh, Kiltacular or something. And so I actually, right before doing this podcast, I looked up who the voice actor was, because I was like, I wonder if that actually is like a Halo or Quake announcer.
John St. John?
It's... No, it's somebody who's been in a ton of video games, including he's the Codex narrator in all the Mass Effect games. He's in Baldur's Gate, Call of Duty. But also, the guy who says mother as Son of the Mask is Volgan from Snake Eater.
Stupid.
Neil Ross, the voice actor.
Fantastic.
Yeah, that went great.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Can I get into my Terminator theory?
Yeah.
Okay, this is the part where the movie turns into Terminator. Because Loki, Alan Cumming, is literally going through a list of, like, what was the list? It was parents, like...
All the kids who were born in the hospital on that day.
Right. So he's going through a list of, like...
Because he knows one of them is, like, somehow, like, tangentially related to the mask.
Right. So he's got a list of these babies that were born in the hospital. Just like the Terminator, you know, gets a list from, like, the police library, the T-1000, of, like, okay, here's, like, all the Sarah Connors and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it's the scene of going to all these different houses to see if it's the Sarah Connor or the mask baby.
Right.
Okay? And then he turns into a bee... Because, you know, well, the T-1000 can change forms and stuff like that. But Loki turns into a bee and stings a receptionist at a hospital in the eardrum and becomes her.
Yeah.
Because remember, she goes to, like, a vending machine and she, like, comes face-to-face with the human version of herself. Just like the guy in T2 who goes to get the coffee and gets the royal flush.
Yeah.
And it's just 100% that. He's going through and mimicking. It's basically Terminator.
It's 100% that.
As good.
You're right. I mean, there's no difference between these films. It's 100% that. I mean, you're right. Yes, there are those overlaps for sure. That bee scene. Just the look of Loki when he has the green face. I was like, why is this so familiar? And I realized it looks like the Green Goblin from Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark.
Oh, yeah.
All the weirdos in the world.
That's really weird that you bring that up, Ben, because just before this podcast, I was in there. I was watching the dance scene again. And I was like, weirdly, no, not the Spider-Man one.
Oh, okay.
I was watching the Too Good to Be True dance scene, and I was like weirdly fascinated by it. And I was like, some part of me was like, am I enjoying this? And it was the same feeling I had when you sent me the Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark Letterman performance,
so
that
fun.
Green Goblin thing. I was just thinking of that, and I was like, I got the same feeling out of both of those scenes.
Yes, that sounds about right. But I was also fascinated by, like, when he's on that computer, he just, like, touches the screen to interact with it. Like, Loki's powers are just shifting and very confusing throughout this entire film. So he's, like, he turns the computer into, like, a touch screen because he has Loki abilities.
Oh, I forgot that.
I would think it would be very easy for him to find a baby since he can do all this other crazy stuff.
Yeah, I don't really see the limits of his powers, really. Yeah. He's turning into other people
and
beings.
Yeah, he can't just sense where this mask is.
Yeah, and, like, why would he be fooled by, like, this one made in Taiwan or something?
Yeah.
And also, just that underlying thing of, like, why does he need this?
Well, he needs it because this is the theme of the film, is it's about responsible parenting, because Odin, Allfather...
Bob Hoskins. Mario from the Mario movie.
Thank God, with so much makeup, he's barely recognizable. Yeah, so he's screaming at him to find the mask. There's a baby born of the mask.
Okay. All right.
We don't know why.
Yeah, it's a good plot. Maybe we're wrong.
He needs it.
Of course. Okay, so here's the thing sequels do when they don't have great ideas. Like the Look Who's Talking thing you said earlier. It's like, okay, the baby's talking.
Yeah.
The second one's like, oh, two babies are talking. I was like, well, shit, we already did two. We got to make a third movie. The dogs are talking. I don't know. And so this one, it's, of course, the dog and the baby both have mask powers.
Yeah.
And not just the dude. And so the dog gets the mask at some point, and everything just starts looking and sounding like Crash Bandicoot for a bit.
Ben, do you remember if the dog ever wore the mask in the first mask
movie? I was trying to remember that, too. I don't think so.
So I read up on the first one before this, and at the end, the last shot of the first movie is Stanley Ipkiss throws the mask into the harbor, and he's like, I don't need this thing anymore, and Otis jumps in and bites it and starts swimming off with it, and Jim Carrey's like swimming after it.
Oh,
so
okay.
I think it's at least teased that the dog would have mask power. So us all as children probably had in our heads to, like, oh, the dog's going to get the mask.
That's going to be fun. I hope they make a whole movie about that.
Did you read that Nintendo Power announced The Mask 2? And they had a promotion in the mid-90s that was, I forgot how you won it, but if you won this Nintendo Power promotion, you would get a walk-on role in The Mask sequel. And The Mask sequel, as planned, did not happen. Jim Carrey said, I don't want to do it. And so in the final issue of Nintendo Power, just a few years ago, they apologized because somebody didn't get their $5,000 and The Mask 2 role.
That's amazing.
When was Nintendo Power announcing movies?
Yeah, that's incredible.
Yeah. Remember the part where Jamie Kennedy just gets covered in piss?
Oh, so I guess I was, I mean, I'm not trying to be a weirdo here, but I was really thinking about, like, what's he seeing? Because he's like, there's like a stream of pee coming out of this baby, and then it's just like a shot of like another stream of pee. It's like, is the baby growing little baby penises? Or what's happening?
I didn't think that deeply.
And then the punchline is then there's just like, the baby just basically pees like a racehorse, and then there's just like an avalanche of piss at the end.
Way too much pee.
I think it's too much pee.
Hey, there's the part here at the end where Loki is chasing Jamie Kennedy like through an alley, and then he drops a concrete wall in his path to stop his progress, and it has graffitied on the side, Loki is a god in the sack. Did you catch that?
I saw that it said something Loki, but I couldn't quite read it. I was confused by that entire sequence because it's like the big moment where Odin brings Loki down to Earth and removes his god powers, which is very Thor, you know, the movie and the Marvel comics and stuff. And then that lasts for like 3 minutes and has like zero repercussions. Like he gets beaten to death with dumpsters then by the baby, and then he's still just totally fine. It's like, I don't understand.
Well, let's not forget the part where the dog bites Loki in the nuts so hard that his eyeballs fly out and go into outer space.
I was more distracted by the super twister scene where the baby's ear slithers across his succulent body and tickles him.
There was a part where it's like a wide shot of this super twister game, and it just looks like something from The Thing.
It's truly like, horrific. But that's
really horrible.
It's a sweet thing that comes online in the third act of this movie of like, oh, the baby and Loki like kind of enjoy each other because they're like rivals, and they have a much better relationship than Jamie Kennedy and the baby do, and then the baby has to choose who's the real father here.
There's a lot of cartoon rivalry stuff here. Like there's a part in the middle where it's like the baby and the dog feuding, and it's just straight up Tom and Jerry.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
which 100% an allusion to that.
And I think it's like probably the best scene in the movie is like, first of all, when the dog first transforms, it actually looks really cool where it's like he's launching all over the place and stuff, but it's all like they have a shot of the backyard and it's practical effects from what I can tell, at least, because the CG in this film is not great. But like everything that he's like colliding into explodes, like the doghouse explodes and this explodes over here. And it's like, it's actually well done. And then there's the insane sequence where the baby and the dog are feuding and then the dog is like on the rope and he's being like pulled through the house. And it's just like this elaborate, insane set piece moment about the dog getting wrapped around things and launching into different areas and stuff.
Yeah. There are parts that I was impressed by this film.
Yeah. Also,
that's not a crazy thing to say.
And I like the moment, too. It's the line delivery of the century in my mind where Jamie Kennedy sees the dog after all this time of being stressed out by the baby in a very Incredibles 2 way, by the way. I don't know if you've seen that, but it feels a lot like that. But anyways, he eventually sees that the dog also has the mask, and he gives one of the worst deliveries I've ever seen where it's just a close-up of Jamie Kennedy. He goes, no. No, it's just, I don't know how one actor can suck so much.
What's the most you've ever enjoyed something Jamie Kennedy did?
I honestly have zero history. I was like, why do I know that name but have no connection? So I looked up his entire Wikipedia entry and IMDb and I was like, yeah, I've never seen a single Jamie Kennedy movie. I've never seen Scream. I've never seen any of that stuff.
Right. Oh, Scream is good. I remember him from this hidden camera show you used to have.
The Jamie Kennedy Experience.
Yeah, that was the first time. I'd seen. But apparently he was in that movie, that Jack Nicholson movie, As Good As It Gets.
He was in that?
He played a street hustler.
Yeah. Oh,
wow.
But he's credited on it.
I Malibu's Most Wanted. Do you remember that?
No.
That looked terrible. that's right. I forgot he was in Scream. Scream's good. And he plays like just kind of a shithead goofball in it. And like that actually fits him well. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I feel like I'd confuse him with Seth Green.
Yeah.
Right? It's kind of that same type of character, typically.
I guess so, except Seth Green, at least, like, you know, Robot Chicken has some fun moments. And, like, I think he's a little bit more of, like, an entrepreneur overall, you know, compared to Jamie Kennedy, where it's like, I looked up, oh, God, what was he in? He's in, like, is it Sharknado sequels? No, Tremors. He's in, like, Tremors 12.
Man, I stopped at 3. I'm curious if those new Tremors are any good. Didn't they shoot a new Tremors and it never came out with Kevin Bacon?
Or was that the show? I forget.
I don't know. Do you remember when he gets a car that has two sets of teeth?
See, this is a real callback to my youth, I felt like, because, yeah, I love the mask so much as a kid. And then also, like, when he gets that car, my first instinct was, that's really sweet. And because it's like
when you saw the pizza van with the Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, I like cars. Like, I love the Batmobile. And, like, I didn't realize how much I love the concept of a Batmobile until the mask had a car. And it's like, I want that toy. I want the mask's car.
So what makes a Batmobile? Is it just something like a specialized car for
yes.
a... Okay.
That's it. Just a specialized car, I guess. It's really my cup of tea.
Yeah. Mr. Car Guy, Ben Hansen.
I drove a minivan.
Your van stops working and you just don't use it for 6 months until your dad comes and...
Daddy, fix my creep van.
You did have a creep van for a while.
Yeah, it was really fun. But it was like kind of an interesting icebreaker on first dates because I'd be like, I'm in the minivan out front. Then I'd be like, I'm serious. Whoa. So it was something to talk about at least as they said, this date's over, sir.
Call you sir?
Well, that's what the police said as he was macing me.
There's a part there where Jamie Kennedy gets the mask back and turns into the thing. And so I can maybe excuse the first time his wife has sex with the mask as confusion because it's like it's dark and she didn't know what was going on. This time he's fully like under a streetlight as a green plastic mask man. And they cut to his wife and she's like, oh,
yeah,
she's like into it.
Yes, absolutely. And also there's that scene, too. Don't forget where Loki invades the house to steal the baby. And he steals him by putting a rocket up his butt and then launches up. That's not the point. So he steals the baby by putting his face on the baby's face to confuse him and then also his face on the wife's face so that when the wife actually comes home, Jamie Kennedy just brutally assaults his wife for an extended sequence and only realizes that it's his wife after he's literally beating her by grabbing her big old boobies and he's like, oh, it is you. That's the climax of that scene. It's horrific.
There's a part there, too, where he does a Payback reference with Mel Gibson, where it's like Payback came out in like 97 and was not a huge film, but we've got a Give Me Back My Son reference where he picks up the phone in this 2005 movie. It's like, referencing Payback?
Yeah. And then also at the end, he says, you know, like, get a load of my little friend, which, I mean, that must be in the original Mask, right? Is that?
You would think so. I feel like I've seen that parodied so many times, the Scarface thing.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of the number. There's a very obvious parody where somebody says that in a comedy.
Yeah, you're right.
I don't. It's so obvious. Hang on.
Yeah. That seems like something that would be in the first one. Because, yeah, he's got like a Tommy gun in the first one. He's shooting up all those mobster guys and everything.
Yeah.
Huh.
No, I'm sorry. Scarface. It was in Scarface.
Well, yeah, no, that was the original.
I know, I'm joking.
Oh, you idiot.
It's just a hard thing to Google.
I like the part at the end where they have a big boxing match and Jamie Kennedy jumps up and farts in Alan Cumming's mouth.
Yeah, and he's like, oh, my mouth was open. Well, he says, so he jumps in the air because they say like, oh, I float like a butterfly, sting like a bee. And then he jumps in the air. Oh, what is it? And he says something like, oh, leaps like a grasshopper and stinks like a skunk.
That's pretty good.
It's a great sequence. Also, the other scene that I was shocked by was, oh, there's a wacky montage where Jamie's trying to take care of this baby, old Jamie, and he's really tired because he has to wake up all the time, and he wakes up, he's like, and his eyes are cross-eyed, like, oh, how early is it? And then he stumbles into the child's room, and he grabs the bottle, and instead of grabbing the bottle, he accidentally grabs, like, a lighthouse figure and then shatters the glass on the top and then thrusts it towards his baby's throat. It's the weirdest joke.
This is like jagged glass and exposed electricity.
Yeah. I remember he was holding it up to his wrist and I thought he was going to slice his wrist open.
Yeah. She like out loud was like, oh my God.
I was like, geez, that took a dark turn.
I am confused in this movie too. He has the night of his life going to this party and, my God, creates a number one hit in the meantime. But so he has this amazing sequence and then he impregnates his wife and she, you know, instead of morning sickness, she like pukes out bubbles and eats silly putty and all this stuff. But then silly string, I guess. But then I was so confused about like he never puts the mask back on. It's like 9 months later and he just never does it.
Right. Okay, because I was confused at one part, because they do a montage of him, like, yeah, waking up and being tired and stuff. And for some reason, at the time, I thought it was insinuating that he was tired because when he went to bed, it was like a Fight Club situation where it's like, oh, Jamie Kennedy's going to bed, but Tyler Durden at night is putting the mask on and, like, going around doing mask stuff, and that's why he's so tired. And then I realized, no, it's just he's got a baby. Like, that's the whole thing.
Yeah, he's too tired to be a cartoon character, I guess, is the idea.
Well, I think that the Otis took the mask and put it somewhere.
Oh, like hid it somewhere?
Yeah, because like when Loki comes looking for the mask, like Jamie Kennedy was like, I don't even know where the dog is.
Oh, okay. Well, he also he explains earlier on, too, before he goes to the party, that he doesn't want to put on the mask because it's, quote, the crappiest piece of crap in Craptown.
That's right.
Yeah, I thought it was weird that, like, can you imagine if, like, someone was like, hey, Ben, why don't you wear this mask for the Halloween party? Like, would you go out of your way to be like, that's the crappiest mask in Craptown?
Who feels that strongly about a mask?
You'd probably just be like, I don't want to wear that one.
It's a cool looking mask.
Wasn't that, like, a big part of the first one, though, is that, like, Jim Carrey was, like, he was kind of this, like, lovable loser, but then he had all this confidence when he wore the mask, and so he was always fighting. It's like a Lord of the Rings ring thing. Like, I thought there was, like, an interesting layer. Am I remembering this wrong?
I think that's right.
But this is the son of the mask, so it's really about baby, and it's mask blood.
That's true, yeah, yeah. Where the others came upon the mask later in life. The baby knows only mask blood. Yeah.
I wonder if they thought this would be a really big hit, and then, like, they could make subsequent movies with the child growing up.
Oh, yeah, like a boyhood thing.
The mask boyhood! Did I ever tell you about that weird experience? I saw Boyhood in the theaters, and I was sitting... I didn't come with them, I swear, but I was sitting next to, like, this old couple, and we were three-fourths of the way through the movie. So the kid had gone from like 6 to 17 or whatever the hell. And I heard the old woman lean over to her husband. She goes, is he getting older? She had no idea. 3/4 way through that movie. The entire point. I can't imagine how confusing would that movie be if you did not know the premise and you're just watching and you're like, what the hell is happening?
I'd love to see them during Benjamin Button.
I do think you talk about, you know, how this is a franchise without a life in it. I honestly think that they could make more mask movies. I'm amazed that they haven't dusted this off.
Yeah, it's been so long now that I feel like even if you're counting Son of the Mask, it's been 15 years since that. Who would be the mask now?
Oh,
Top guy. Who's the best physical comedy guy out there right now? Jonah Hill.
You need like someone with a rubbery face, you know, like that's what you need. Because going back and watching those old mask clips, there's so many parts where it's like, I thought that the CG or special effects looked great. I think it like won an Oscar actually for the special effects or some honor back in the day. But you realize it's just a lot is Jim Carrey's face and how good and malleable it is. But I'm trying to think, who's that now?
Pete Davidson?
No.
Channing Tatum.
Channing Tatum's the mask. Does he have a rubber face? I don't think I've ever seen a Channing Tatum movie.
He has a potato face.
What's his big movie? I know Magic Mike. I don't think I've ever seen a Channing Tatum movie.
He's been around.
Yeah.
He was G.I. Joe.
Let's see. I tried Googling rubber face actor. And it turns out...
Stretch Armstrong, it turns out.
Well, hang on. Jim Carrey was in a movie in 1981 called Rubber Face?
Oh.
What the hell's happening?
I feel like I heard of that.
Yeah, apparently. What are the odds of that? All right. Maybe that's somewhere in my brain.
That's so weird to think that, like, there's not somebody that comes to mind is, like, who is the, like, leading kind of physical comedy, like, facial expression comedic actor.
Oh, you know who it's Tyler Perry. Madea wears the mask?
I would see that.
Oh, 100%.
Ben, you and I saw Jack and Jill in the theaters.
That's right. Unforgettable. Dunkachino.
Al Pacino, the mask. This movie ends with a CG baby winking at the camera.
It's your film review. That's all you need to say.
I mean, I think it says a lot about the
movie. Really does say all you need to say.
And I think it probably does a wink sound effect. Like,
oh, absolutely.
Does it do the circle like? Bah, 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 bah?
I mean, that is another redeeming thing, other than like, oh, live action cartoons is like watching this movie and realizing how much the filmmakers loved old cartoons was kind of heartwarming.
No, honestly, and I wrote that down, that like this movie is very easy to make fun of, but there was a very genuine love of animation, I think, in this, that I felt like, you know what, there is something to this. I don't think it's just straight up garbage. I would put this above an Old Dogs or a Wild Hogs or a Dumb and Dumber 2.
And I mean this with all sincerity. It deserves more than that 6% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, all right. I'll give it a good 24.
Yep, this is 24 territory. Absolutely.
Yes. Bonk, overall, what were your thoughts on your experience watching Son of the Mask?
Well, you know, it was better than I thought it would be. I thought it would be kind of like phoned in and, you know, because without Jim Carrey, I mean, Jim Carrey was the driving force of that first movie. And I didn't know if they were just going to try to like have, because again, I didn't even know Jamie Kennedy was in it until like you told me just before we started watching the movie. Oh, wow. And then I think you said that he was the son of the mask.
I think I thought that. I forgot that the baby was the thing.
So I just thought it would be like him doing like a shitty version of Jim Carrey's performance.
Oh, like, oh, he was the Stanley Ipkiss's direct son.
But right off the bat, like with that museum scene in the very beginning, I was kind of like, I was immediately into it because it was going so hard and like really believing in everything it did.
People are trying in this movie.
Yeah. And if it had a real pace to it. Yes. Like, there wasn't any time where nothing was really happening.
Yeah, I mentioned to you while we were watching it, because we paused and did a bathroom break or something, and, like, a lot of times we will watch bad movies for Painting the Stream, and, like, we'll pause, and we feel like it's been an hour and a half, and it's like we're 24 minutes in, and it's like, oh, god damn it. This one, it moved along. It's hard to watch at times, but, like, I don't think it was the worst.
No, it was just one of those movies, like, I don't mind watching, but I didn't laugh, like, at all.
Nothing funny happened.
No, so. I think I was grimacing most of the movie.
Yeah, I think the party scene is probably the absolute worst, right?
That's the peak. I mean, it did slow down in that one bizarre sequence where Jamie Kennedy was trying to bond with his kid, and they just played, like, the Hawaiian What a Wonderful World, where, like, you know, where it's like, so originally it's like that Somewhere Over the Rainbow, you know, like kind of like the Samoan Hawaiian version, which is a great song. And then they like remixed it with like, What a Wonderful World. It's like this bizarre, overly heartfelt moment in the middle of, you know, fart the film.
Yeah. It felt like they did a focus group thing without that scene. And the focus group was like, we need to be able to connect to this family and these characters. And they just like shoehorns like a fucking montage of him caring about his kid.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But that is Son of the Mask. If you would like to spend American dollars to watch that movie, you can do that on a variety of streaming services. I know we're all very happy that we did here.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, it could have been worse, right?
Yep. Great choice.
Thanks.
Yes.
It's glad we all wanted to watch it before this.
I didn't think it was going to be better than the Gary Shandling documentary, but it did it. It really did it.
Ben Hansen.
Yeah.
We want to do we just got a new little game here, just for me and Bonk to play with ourselves here. It's called, do you know what Hugh is?
Hugh?
The concept of Hugh.
No.
I'm going to toss to Bonk for this because I had never heard of this until Bonk told me about Hugh not too long ago.
Let me tell you about Hugh, Hansen. I think you'll really like it. It essentially is just essentially, it's like a lifestyle. A Hugh lifestyle is one that embraces coziness and comfort, friends and family. And really, it's you sitting back and appreciating the small things in life.
Huh.
And I personally very much identified with this Hugh concept. And, you know, I have a very Hugh lifestyle.
Very much, yes.
So Dan found this game, the Hugh game. And it's not a game in which people compete against each other.
There's no real rules or anything. No winners.
Rules.
No.
It's just right.
It is. It is basically, it's just a bunch of cards with questions that are supposed to be a conduit for like, oh, you can have a fun little conversation about this. There's three questions per card. And we thought, hey, we got this game. We like it. Maybe we'll just throw out a question every podcast here for a bit and see what conversation comes out of it.
Am I in an ad?
No, I literally just saw this on like Kinja Deals. And I was like, oh, Bianca was just talking about Hugh. And then we did a few of the cards the other night. And it's like, this is fun. We should do this on the podcast.
So it's Hygge?
Yeah, it's like Swedish or something, right?
Something like that. Danish, maybe. I don't know. But I didn't see the question. Dan chose the question.
Okay.
So. Yes. Which, by the way, we're all playing Animal Crossing right now, and she mentioned that like Animal Crossing is like the most Hugh game of all time.
Oh, interesting.
It's very comfortable, cozy, happy. Yes.
Yes.
But here's the question from the Hugh game on this inaugural Hugh game segment here. What was your favorite thing on the playground when you were a kid?
What a good one. And I'm going to really take my time and savor this and appreciate it.
Okay, well, if I may, I can do something. When I was a kid, the playground at my elementary school had this big tire tower. It was like a bunch of tires stacked upright so like you could crawl into the tire hole. And there's a bunch stacked in like a pyramid formation. And you could crawl all the way to the top and then like go inside, like fall down inside. And they eventually took it away because I imagine kids were getting injured. But I loved it so much. It was so fun.
Is this one of those things when you were a kid and you got to the top, you probably felt like you were like on top of Everest.
Yes,
and then if you saw it now, it would be like 3 feet off the ground.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That sounds great though.
Yeah.
Yeah. So wait, could you get stuck in, like, were kids getting stuck in the tires?
I think maybe kids were falling from the top because I think you're supposed to like climb in, but kids were like getting to the top and then falling in.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. I think mine was probably, we never had a tire tower or much climbing stuff. Mm-hmm. I liked anything that was like zip line in nature, where it's like a thing where it's just like you grab a thing and it would just be like 10 feet or whatever and you could go across. Like, I always liked that. I always liked a good old fashioned swing and jumping off it, seeing how
swings
far you could
good.
Go. And then did you ever have the thing where you got two handholds on the side and then it's got like a barrel that you just run on?
Ooh, yeah. Very
Those
good.
Things were great.
Yep, yeah. For sure. Yeah.
Hanson, do you remember when we were drinking at your place in Minnesota? And then it was like me, you, Tim Turry, Ronnie, like a bunch of just our friends.
Yeah.
And it was like the middle of the night and we went to, there was this like baseball field that we used to like hit balls around and stuff.
Hussack
and
Park, then they, yeah.
Yeah, and they had this, oh, it was next to the haunted dentist office.
That's right.
666, yes. Whole other story there. But there's a playground and we're all just like drunk and like, oh, let's just go fuck around on this playground in the middle of the night. And we went into like, there's this big like plastic tube. So there's like eight drunk guys just running around going down slides and stuff. One of us, I can't remember, I think it was like Jesse, your buddy, that went in first. And there was like a homeless guy sleeping in there.
Oh my God.
So, I think he woke up. And I think Jesse or someone came around. I was like, ah, guys, we gotta go. And we're like, what? It's like, and he like pointed.
Oh my
and
God.
There's
well, I think you didn't believe us. And you then went and like checked it out or like dove in. It's like, hey, we're just going to, we'll let you get back to sleep, man. Like, sorry. What a mess.
Yes. Yes.
But yeah, okay, back to Hugh, really, really focusing on this. It's like anything tall, I think I was into, just like getting to the tallest point and just like looking at our stuff. But I think the number one thing, it's very simple, but it was just the, like you guys played chicken, right? Where it's just like a wooden beam?
No, with cars.
No, but like, so there was like just, I think it was several stacks of like higher and higher wooden beams. And we would just play chicken and you kind of choose the tier that you'd want to be on where you just balance on that. And then if you tap the person's hand,
I've never done this.
Okay. So you'd play it where you'd grab the person's hand and then the first person to fall off would lose. So it'd kind of be like this weird push and pull while you're also balancing. And so it's this really intense duel. And we had like a whole hierarchy and ranking going on. Like you knew who were the best chicken players and stuff. But the fun thing was like to start the match, you had to like touch the person's hand because that's how you did it, right? But everybody would get into like this weird game where like you'd slap the hand and then back away. And it was like this weird mind game because if they were trying to slap yours and you moved yours away, then their weight would throw them off and you'd automatically win. But it was like a very complex sport that
it's
maybe
like an American Gladiators event.
Yeah, maybe it was isolated only into New London, Minnesota. I don't know.
You know, Ben, you're an interesting fella because I feel like you're very fearful in a lot of situations.
Yeah.
But when it comes to like fun games and stuff, I feel like you've always been kind of bold. I remember one time it was late at night in Seattle. Me and you, I think we'd just been taken out for like some oyster dinner by the time we were on the boat with the guy who ran Sucker Punch.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we got back and there were a bunch of, we were waiting for an Uber or something. And there were a bunch of like little like posts and the Uber was taking too long. And you were like leaping from post to post on these like kind of skinny little things. And we were being like, wow, Hanson's being brave.
Brave meaning he's acting like a 12-year-old. I see.
Braver than usual, Ben Hanson.
Yeah, I don't know. I like to climbing trees and running around outside. Like, you always think that I'm some wimpy weirdo, which I am. But like in my childhood, like I grew up on 33 acres in the wilderness, you know? So it's like, there's a lot of nonsense leaping around and stuff.
The farm boy in you comes out sometimes.
Yes, that's a good way to put it.
Yes, yes. I appreciate that. Well, Hanson, thank you so much for joining us on Painting the Stream. We're going to let you plug all your stuff, but we're going to plug our stuff first.
Please.
So if you're listening to this, thank you very much for listening to Painting the Stream. And a special thank you to all of our subscribers on Patreon.
Thank you so much.
Patreon.com/PaintingTheStream. We keep it simple. We got one $5 tier, not like the fucking crazy pyramid scheme Ben Hanson here is doing with his $700 call-outs or whatever.
Yep, so it's our only tier.
For $5 a month, you get an ad-free version of this podcast each and every week. You also are going to get the episodes a day early.
Ooh, your own whole day.
A whole day, but most importantly, you're going to get a Bonk-Who.
That's right, Dan.
Written specifically for you from Bonk herself. Bonk, do we have a new patron this week?
We sure do.
Yeah, do you have a Bonk-Who for them?
His or her name is Cassie. Cassie, this one's for you, buddy. Thank you for your support. We love you. And here's your Bonk-Who. Do what Cassie says, and we will get out of here with our limbs intact.
Hanson, her Bonk-Whos are always very dark and mysterious.
They're not always.
Not always. Sometimes they're nice, but sometimes there's murder afoot or something.
They could be mysterious.
Bonk, yes. Why do you think most people that like dark things like you do kind of show it to the world, whereas you're very bubbly and sweet? What's the barrier there? What have you constructed in your soul?
Oh, I don't know. I know what you mean, though. When I go to, like, a metal show, everyone is, like, wearing their battle jackets and stuff, like the vests that are covered in patches and spikes. And, like, they're always trying to seem really tough and act really tough. But I just like good music. You know what I mean? But, yeah, I don't know. I always gravitated toward that stuff. I'm all about the contrast.
And you've always liked really dark, violent, like, fiction and, like, the art that you've done and everything. Some of it's been extremely violent.
Well, maybe that's where I feel like some people have it evenly spread throughout their life, but I just kind of push it all into the things I consume and that I like, artistically.
Yeah.
And then my day-to-day life is very pleasant.
You literally, on the arm facing me here, have a bunch of beheaded men here on your arm here and then a puppy below it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then Morrowind tattoos on the other side, so, yes.
Were you sweet and bubbly when you were, like, 13?
No.
Okay, so this is, like, a later thing that you developed this sweetness.
Definitely.
So yeah, it's all definitely. A veneer, and we can crack it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good.
Ben, I remember the first time you met Bonk, we were walking down Taraval Street in San Francisco, going down to the beach, and Bianca saw a dog, and she bent down and got very, just like, oh my god, look at you, look at this cute little dog, and Hanson, you just looked at her and you go, oh, you're one of those people.
I don't think it was as judgy as you're implying, but it helped to be like, when you don't know somebody, and then they basically act like they're wearing the mask in their cartoon excitement when they see a dog, I think it tells you, like, okay, got it. I now know who this...
Well, okay, this is the kind of person Ben Hanson is.
Oh, no.
He said that when he... If he has kids and the kids want a dog, he would sooner act like a dog than actually get them one.
Because it'd be more fun for everybody.
No, that would be so weird.
No. I would call Child Protective Services on my own father.
I'd only do it for like a week straight. It'd be fine. Oh, speaking of dogs, we should mention when those two dogs in Son of the Mask fell in love and then the dog wearing the mask, like, sucked the nose off the other dog.
Oh, that was
remember
weird.
This? Like, put his entire lips around.
They went on that date.
Oh, were they doing, like, a Lady and the Tramp thing?
I guess he was, like, kissing goodbye. Or also when Loki turned the neighbor into a giant nose and then the dog licked that nose, too.
Right.
Sorry, but we don't need to talk about the film anymore. We got it.
We've now talked about the film, the full running time of the film, I think. All right. Well, Hanson, before we get out of here, I want you to be able to plug everything you got going on. I know we mentioned it up top with the old Min-Max and all that, but why don't you give the folks some accurate URLs and information?
The old Min-Max, at least 3 months old. So you can go check out our podcast, our main podcast, The Min-Max Show. That's MINNMAX. Just both of our Patreon URLs both have two N's in them. Think about that. But
they do.
Anyways, that's the main thing. And then we also have game clubs. So we call them the Deepest Dive. So we have a big community game club. We're doing Animal Crossing right now. We're going to be doing the Final Fantasy VII remake, which is going to be exciting. So it's going to be the best, most thorough discussion about games on the internet, which sounds insane, but I promise it's true. So we're taking like hundreds and hundreds of comments from the internet or from like our community, boiling it down, editing it, and just getting as detailed as we can possibly get about these games. And the Final Fantasy VII remake is going to be a big one because it's my favorite game of all time originally. So I'm going to have a lot to say about this thing.
Awesome.
I would recommend everyone check that out and follow Hanson at Yozetti, Yozetty, on Twitter. I say this with no hyperbole and no blowing smoke up your ass. Ben Hanson, probably my favorite personality in the gaming industry.
Wow.
Yes.
Well, wait, Tim's still in the gaming industry.
But he's not like a forward-facing personality, really.
Yeah, he
is. You know, he does like PlayStation blogs and stuff, you know. But like, you're front and center. You're Michigan J. Frogging all over the industry here.
That's right. Hey, it's fun. Tim's on like PlayStation Underground and stuff. He's on the podcast.
I know. I'm happy he gets to do podcast. I played Animal Crossing. We played for like an hour and a half at Animal Crossing on a Discord call with him today. Tim's the best.
He is the best.
But as far as someone front and center covering the gaming industry, you are my favorite.
Thank you.
I would recommend anyone go check out the work Ben Hansen is doing over
I love the Min Max Show. It's my favorite video game podcast. I just, obviously, all your personalities meld together so well, and you're a great host, and I really appreciate the positive. Not that you're not positive in that you will, you know, not criticize something, but you try to keep it, you know, not super dwelling on the bad stuff, which I really appreciate.
Yeah, it's a small distinction, but it's really helped for like Min-Max overall, where, you know, we define ourselves like, okay, it's about games, friends, and getting better. And so like the entire community has this positive bent to it, which is awesome. But then it's helped like define our coverage too. Like when I was playing Pokemon Sword and Shield, I enjoyed the game overall, but like it's so easy to just tear that game apart on so many fronts. And so I was thinking about, oh, do I make a video talking about how crappy this is? And I was like, why? Like, why make something negative? Like, let's only focus on positive things in games. And I think it comes through, and our community really appreciates it. And then I'm not pointing fingers, but every once in a while, when, like, I listen to other gaming podcasts, it's like, man, you just got a new Half-Life game and we're opening with criticism. Like, I understand criticism is fair, but like, there's room for some positivity here.
Definitely.
Yeah, the cynicism can be exhausting in
this industry,
the gaming industry. I'm not part of it anymore, so it's your industry.
That's right.
And so to see a positive, friendly face out there covering it is great to see. And you're just the best, Ben Hansen, so keep doing what you do.
Will do. Thank you. This has been very sweet. What an ass-kiss rodeo at the end here, but hey, I appreciate it.
That's the next... We're going to start a spin-off podcast called Ask Kiss Rodeo. We don't talk about movies. We just talk about people we like.
Perfect.
So, if you want to follow us on Twitter, we are at PanTheStream. You can find out what we're going to be watching for the next week. If you want to watch along, you can email us comments, suggestions, all that stuff at PantingTheStream@gmail.com. Give us the 5 stars on an old Apple podcast. That'll help us out quite a bit. Ben Hansen, thank you again so much.
Thank you, Ben.
Been a pleasure as always.
Thank you. Let's do it again.
Yes. Bonk, thank you, as always.
Thank you.
And we will all be back next week. Not all. Hansen's not here anymore. Just me and Bond.
Try and stop
we'll bring Hansen back next week with Painting the Stream.
Bye.